Very welcome to the Curiotitas podcast, which we, out of this perspective, call the Curiotitas International. And this is a new project being broadcasting in different languages. And today, as you hear, we will try to do it in English. And to that, for that reason, we have two guests. One is a real English speaking, Beilu Olissa, and Are Thoresen. And I'm Erland Kornfeld.
And I have an English wife.
Well, that's an achievement. To introduce these podcasts, I have to say that everything being said here represent each of us. So we don't represent anything else, any organizations or institutions. That's our personal views, if somebody would want to get the feedback, which we are very grateful if you want to do on the curiotitas@gmail.com or Instagram or Facebook, where we also are as a Curiotitas pod. So that perhaps is a short introduction. I'm Erland Kornfeld, living in Järna in Sweden, and I've been working as a curative educational teacher and doing a lot of things around anthroposophy and meditation. And you are?
Hi, I'm Beilu Olissa. I'm from Brooklyn, New York in America. And I'm visiting here in Järna for, I've been here for 2 weeks and here for another 2 weeks. And associating with the Youth International program that's here and have been invited today to join.
Yeah. Very glad to have you.
Yes, too.
And last but not least,
Are Thoresen. I'm a veterinarian from Norway who has been working with the problem of translocating or transforming the elemental beings of diseases, which has been one of my life tasks for many years, and how to solve that problem.
And therefore, obviously, that's going to be a good part of what we're going to talk about today. And perhaps, Are, you would like to give us an introduction on the theme of translocation and transformation.
Yeah. And then I might remind the listener of a lecture that Rudolf Steiner held in Oslo about the fifth gospel, where he uses 4.5 pages to describe the feelings of Jesus of Nazareth before he received the Christ. And Rudolf Steiner described how Jesus of Nazareth traveled this whole area of the Middle East, quite large parts, I think. And he got more and more depressed because he saw that no medical system, no philosophic system, actually no system at all, none of the shamanic systems and so on were able to transform the elemental beings of disease. They just pushed them away to others. This is, I saw very early in my medical treatment, I saw that all animals, and that is all diseases in animals, came from the owners. So I asked myself, how? What is it that go over? And then I realized, I asked friends, one is a professor in TCM in Australia, and some doctors from Taiwan, and so on. They all knew about this. It's all described in the old books. And the doctors in Taiwan said that all acupuncturists, because they were acupuncturists, they translocate diseases. But we don't tell you in the West, because you don't believe in it. And she said, one of them said that in Taiwan, that is okay for our morality, that it goes from the stronger to the weaker and end up in animals. but we understand that your morality is different. So she added that those of us, that is doctors in Taiwan, who are moral, they try to push these diseases into plants or trees or animals. And then she added something interesting. Those most moral, they try to take it on themselves, but they live very short. And then I said, why don't you change the system? No, that is impossible, for the acupuncture system is set, she said. And then I realized that this translocation, it happens in all diseases, all treatments. And in all schools of alternative medicine, the therapists learn how to protect themselves. But if you have to protect yourself, then it means that it goes to others. And I even asked anthroposophic doctors, this is something we have to discuss, I said. And then they answered, yes, we know about it, but we don't want to talk about it.
And why is that? What do you say?
For me, it was quite obvious, because it takes away the trust in the therapist or doctor.
Okay.
If you are sick and you go to a doctor, you believe in him, that he cures you.
And takes the disease away.
Yes. Yeah. And if you know that your disease will hurt others, you don't want to go. And that is a problem for doctors. They know about it, more or less.
And I suppose that this applies even to therapists for different kinds.
Yeah.
Everybody who cures somebody else.
Yes. Mm. And for example, where you come from, Haiti, that is a very known procedure, how to make elemental beings go into other people to harm them. That is called black magic.
Yeah.
So in in European therapy, we do our black magic in a way without intention of hurting, because we think we help.
But would that be a difference in doing it intentional or non-intentional?
I think that has a difference from your karma.
Yeah.
But still you hurt others.
Yeah.
If you don't know what you're doing, you are somewhat excused. But now everybody who listens to this knows now what I do. Now there is no more.
There's no excuse.
Excuse.
No.
What are your thoughts about Reiki? Do you know about that practice?
Yes. And I have watched Reiki healers. For the first, they also transform. Translocate. Push it over to others, yes. You see, some say, no, I don't translocate. I push the spirits into the light.
Yeah.
But that is not transformed. Mm. Or some say, I let it go into the earth. Mm. Yes. And that destroys the earth. Mm. It gathers in the first 9 layers. The deeper you come, the worse the spirits. So there it stays.
In the earth.
In the earth. And it grows and grows for every year more and more. Today, about 1/3 of the 9 first layers are gathered with bad spirits or pathological elemental beings. 2/3 are still free.
And those 2/3 are to the center of the earth.
And no, you have the first, there are 12 layers. The first 9 was described by Steiner. At that time, he couldn't reveal about the last 3. And he described the evilness of these 9 layers. But 2/3 are free still.
In the first 9 layers,
First. And that was kept secret at Steiner's time because I had to protect it. Because Christ was not yet come into the etheric world. Now he can protect it, but at that time he couldn't protect it.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to keep it secret.
And that happened in the 30s?
Yes.
Yeah.
Then you could start to reveal the secrets of the 12 layers of the earth. But every therapist who then transform, or especially in the shamanic traditions, they send the spirits into the light or the earth or something and say, now it's gone. It's not gone.
It's just gone in the sense it's not a part of me anymore.
Yes.
Yeah. Even in traditions where, like, I know there's a lot of, well, this is a question, I guess, about shamanic practices of practices like saging as a mechanism of from my perspective, I thought that things like saging is a transforming of the spirit. And then also in rituals of, like, with a sword or using, like, angelic forces and things like that. I know that that's a big practice in shamanic rituals, is like using like an angelic sword or like slashing and like destroying that energy, like versus just maybe like sending it away.
You see, if you attack these beings, they go away. You can attack them by needles with homeopathic remedies, with different herbs, you attack them, and then they go out. Yes, that's true, they go out, but they are not transformed. And then you have the words of Rudolf Steiner again, and of the highest initiates ever, Jesus of Nazareth. He observed that no system worked. We have his words for it.
But I know that you have some work with the way and dealing with transformation.
Yes.
Not to achieve this.
Yes.
Could you please tell us something about that?
Yeah, that is, again, this lecture, when Jesus of Nazareth, I come back to him, had realized that no existing system could transform these demons. He went to Jordan and got the incarnation of Christ. And that is the answer.
So Jesus was incarnated by, like, Christ was incarnated
in Jesus. Yeah. And that was the answer. After that, he could transform demons. And after that, he can transform demons. So the Christ consciousness, or the Christ presence, or Christ, it's easy to say Christ, is the only force or entity or consciousness that can transform demons. So if we use Christ, and I asked Judith von Halle about this, and her answer was that if you treat with Christ consciousness, that is the only way to transform the disease. All other ways translocate it.
And going into that, sort of being a bit more practical or pragmatic for Bailo and me, how do we go about the Christ consciousness?
Yeah, then you have to find what is Christ.
Yeah.
And then you have another thing. What is Christ and what is this essence of Christ? And I found out through several years that the essence of Christ is love thy enemy.
Love thy enemy.
You see, in Norway, we don't hear the difference between love and low.
Oh.
And not wet and wet. I always told people I had gone to wet school.
Doing wet jobs.
But I was at vet school, vet jobs, and I didn't understand why they laughed.
Yeah.
In Norway, we don't hear that.
No.
Where was I?
Christ consciousness.
And love thy enemy. That means you have, if you have a disease that is consisting of elemental beings, then you cannot attack the elemental beings. You have some elemental beings who gives pain, some who give sclerosis, some who give blood circulation, some who give fantasies or hallucinations and so on. You cannot attack them. Mm. Let's say you have a pain elemental being in that shoulder.
Yeah.
If I use an ointment, then I attack that elemental being. If I use needles, I attack that elemental being. Mm. If I use a herb or whatever, or Reiki or craniosacral, I attack that elemental being. Mm. I must not do that. I must go on the other side.
And by the other side, do you mean the other shoulder?
That is actually, or down here, the right hip, or in the middle between. There are several methods, but the main is that you cannot treat the disease. In, let's say, if you have a kidney disease, then in homeopathy, you could, for example, use chamomile, or you can use warmth of the kidneys or something like that. But if you're going to do something totally different in 90 degrees, you treat the gallbladder, for example. You give homeopathic iron, you give herbs that treat the gall, for example. And then you start a transformation of the kidney.
And sort of that consciousness, would you call that the Christ consciousness?
Yeah.
Knowing this?
Yes.
Not treating the actual ailment?
Yeah. For example, if a horse has an atlas who is stuck, cannot move his head, then you can treat a point here, which is no problem here, but you treat here, then suddenly it loosens.
Mm-hmm.
And
that consciousness also, you have to know what you do, not just do it.
Yeah. So if you were practicing acupuncture, for example, and could you use that technique? And I feel like within maybe some, like there's some, maybe something, you have a headache, but then you receive points somewhere else in the body or on the feet or things like that. And that's changing the energy. But if you were even more intentional about and the consciousness of bringing Christ into the treatment, would then that transform acupuncture from translocation to transformation?
Yes.
Mm. And,
so there is a solution, but you have to know it. It is actually quite easy.
Mm. I had a question about Reiki again, just because in my, from my understanding, Reiki is somehow related to Christ consciousness already. It's because it's Reiki, like, is like the word and the energy of it is infusing like a love energy, like a Christ conscious energy, like through. So from my perspective, I thought that it was transforming.
Well, what I have observed, I have this gift sometimes to observe these elemental beings. They are not transformed. They are translocated. My uncle was a Reiki healer, so I watched it.
And but then I guess it also, it would depend on maybe the level of the person's intention.
Of course. It depends on the therapist.
Yeah.
If the therapist is not have this Christ consciousness, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
They have to know what to do. You cannot just replicate another one.
Yeah.
And also, this is also different in different cultures. For example, these elemental beings of disease. In Norway, they have a certain look. Already in England and Ireland, they look differently. In America, they look very differently. And in South America, even more differently. One example, Dalai Lama got the Peace Prize in Norway for many years ago, or you were born maybe. So he came to Norway sometimes because he got friends there. And he brought his doctor, his private doctor, the Dalai Lama, who was considered as the best doctor of Tibet, the best Tibetan doctor. And there was a group of doctors and me who studied with him. And he thought he was exceptional in diagnosis. We were amazed of his knowledge and his insight. Amazed.
Yeah.
And then he had a group of patients, which he treated with Tibetan herbs. And then after 2 or 3 years, we, because we, his doctors were interested in the effect, none have gotten better. The Tibetan elemental beings didn't work in Norway because they are too different from the Norwegian elemental beings. And also, I worked with the Norwegian Sami shamans, and we had a shaman gathering in Norway, up north of Oslo. And then the Norwegian shaman, and then this was a period of where we invited shamans from Siberia and from South America. And Romania, it was also one. But the Norwegian shaman, his name was Ailo Gaup, very well known. He made a ritual and the Norwegian elemental came out from the forest and stood in a ring around.
Mm.
Quite small creatures, you know, this nisser, we say.
Mm.
And then the South American shaman did a ritual.
Mm.
And for the elemental beings, when you have the shaman there, there is no distance. So he called forth the South American elemental beings, which were frightening. They were totally different. They were snake-like.
Yes.
Like, well, you know, yeah. And when this, and he, and I stood there, and this huge anaconda came.
Wow.
And you know, the Norwegian elemental beings, they were terrified. They fled, and they were shivering for weeks. So I said, this mixture of this globalism or shamanism, you think it is good? I said, it's not. It's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are totally different. It's like you should live in one room, let's say, with an Eskimo and an Aboriginal from Australia, and you in one room. It wouldn't be easy because we behave so totally different.
I just have a question, because if you could say something about your method of knowledge.
Yeah. How do we?
How do you know all this?
How do I know all this? And that came from, I was 5 years old and I had no Walkman and no Game Boy. And no TV, and I had no siblings, and no friends, and old parents. So I walked in the forest, and I had nothing to do. I walked there, what shall I do? So then I suddenly, and I looked at trees, and I could look at trees for a long time, or plants. And then suddenly I went out of myself and faded into the tree, or the plant. That is my method. And then I suddenly saw creatures. First, demonic ones.
Mm.
So sometimes I was a little scared, just a little.
Mm.
Other times not. And so I did it. And when I became a veterinarian, I did it for purpose of therapy, observing that elemental beings went from the owner to the animal. So I understood that it was no use in treating the animal. You had to treat the owner. And then I happened to be closed down during COVID. And I also got some fatigue, long COVID. So I just had nothing to do for some months. I had nothing to do. And I don't have TV. So I had nothing to do. And then I thought, okay, I fade into the elemental world. And then I went deeper than ever. And then I saw it was a second realm. and the third realm. And there in the third realm, which is called the first, was the Azuric elemental beings. In the second, the Arimanic elemental beings, and the third, the Luciferic elemental beings. And Rudolf Steiner described this, although at his time it was closed, so he doesn't actually describe it in detail. He was a little cautious about describing it. In the third elemental realm, you can do healing. It's called hygienic occultism. In the second, you can do mechanical occultism. You can order or make atoms and molecules behave. And in the deepest, you can do eugenic occultism, which has to do with birth and death. So if you act from the deepest level, you can actually kill somebody in on distance. In the third, you can heal somebody in distance. Or in the second, you can make a machine work without electricity or gasoline. Mm. And there is one man who did that in America prematurely. He was able to go into this second realm, and he made a car go without any gas or any electricity. And he made a company about with it. But the problem is only he could drive the car.
Mm.
His name was Keeley.
So what was...
So he was 500 years too early. So he could do this.
What was the driving force of the car then? Like, how was he...
No, when you go into the third elemental realm, your consciousness can move elemental beings.
Mm.
In the second, your consciousness and will can move molecules. Mm. In the first, your consciousness and will can do incarnation or death, birth or death.
But sort of being out of my or our beginner's point of view, as I haven't started with six, I have started with 68 because of you, to try to exercise these things.
Yes.
I have a huge disadvantage because I won't live for another 50 years, probably. But still, you can start to practice it, I suppose.
Yeah. And next time you're born, you start then earlier.
Yeah. But what can I do now for the rest? I mean,
yeah.
Beilu has a better chance than
yes.
me.
Yes, that is to fade into different things. That is a training, how you get out of this, you have to get out of your body and into something else.
I have a question about the body, I guess. What are your views on possession and like
that's the same
in terms of like being like if you're projecting your consciousness elsewhere and you're not like protecting or like you're not embodied, and then maybe there are elemental beings or other spirits that yeah. can
possess
you. So how
possession?
Yeah. How? What? Yeah. What are? What is your perspectives or insight on that, and how to navigate that? Like
yeah,
that and, consciousness.
And the Catholic Church, they have specialists who drive these bad spirits out. It's called
exorcist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it goes out. And very often when it goes out, they shiver. And then it goes out. That is a translocation.
Right.
And they say go into the light. But it very seldom does. Maybe if this exorcist have this Christ consciousness, he can transform it. That's up to the one who do it.
Yeah.
But back to the road into things. You have to fade into things. That is very easy in animals. I actually saw a film which demonstrated exactly what I mean. And that is called the famous film called Crocodile Dundee. There are three films. Have you seen that?
I don't think I have, but I've heard of it.
I've seen them.
Yeah. So he comes with this woman from New York. She was also from New York. And she met this Crocodile Dundee.
The question is, who?
Now,
you or I?
Now I am Crocodile Dundee and you are this journalist.
Mm.
And he was driving in this Jeep and then a fierce buffalo stood in front of the car.
Mm.
And then he go out. And she is very upset, of course.
Mm.
And then he look at this beast like this. And he do like this, something like this. He stand like this, and suddenly the beast just lie down. You remember that scene? That is exactly, he faded into the ox, calmed it down. And you can do, I do that with animals when they are angry. I go into them and owners say, suddenly he's kind to you. He thinks you are kind to him, they say. But the thing is, I fade into it. And when you fade into it, like I do now, then you are inside the animal and it feels you. And then it gets quiet. One animal in my life I was not able to do that with, and that was a North American cave dog. They are not, you see, to do this is much easier if you are tame. But if you're wild, it's more difficult. So Dundee was very clever. And I wasn't able to come into it to make a diagnosis. And he said, yeah, that is this special. These are wild dogs living in caves in North Morocco. And they may open to only one person. And that was the owner. So then I went beside the owner and I used his connection. And then I could make a diagnosis and treat. But it was impossible to get him.
Well, it's rather hard to practice this fading, I think.
Yes.
It's a sort of, you have to do a lot of practice to manage it, because
it's a training.
One of the obstacles, at least for me, is easy to try to do it over the head.
Yeah.
Through the thinking.
Yeah.
And I know you always tell, don't do it over the head. You have to do it deeper through the heart.
But when you have done it 100,000 times from the heart, you can actually do it from the head also.
Yeah. But for beginners.
Yeah.
You have to try to find a way to do it through the fading through the heart, which is something else than thinking about it.
Mm.
It's like you have your boyfriend there and he only see you through his mind or he see you through the heart and you can feel the difference.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
When he see you through the heart, then you think, he loves me.
Yeah.
But if he just here,
he
don't love me.
Yeah.
I think that, especially women.
Yeah. And I think that sort of goes from my experience as well. If you do it with somebody you like, it's easier to sort of to examine or to feel the difference between doing it with the head or with the heart.
Yeah.
And I had some years ago a patient who actually went to school with me, a girl, and I didn't remember her. And then she suddenly said, do you know why we girls didn't like you? No, I said, we felt that you saw through us, which is true. I did. But girls don't like that.
Mm.
So,
what do you mean by that?
What I mean by what? That girls don't like it?
That, and what do you mean you're seeing through them? Like, what do you mean?
When you fade into somebody, you are in them.
Yeah.
You see sort of in them.
In them.
Or through.
Or
through. That is experienced. And if you are a 16-year-old girl, you don't like that.
Mm.
Then you want to be yourself. You don't want an idiotic boy to look inside you.
Mm.
You want to keep your secrets.
Yes.
Yeah, that's interesting. Mm. Yeah, I guess maybe the difficulty of that practice would be like with the wild dog, you're saying, like the cave dog.
Yeah.
Like,
you want
there's a block,
yes,
like they're creating a block. So I know that there's like in the practice of like eye gazing or things like that that are meant to help people connect from the heart.
Yeah.
Then it's a part, so much of the difficulty is the maybe the mind, the mental sphere that's like anxiously like, I don't want this person to like see me, or like, and you're creating all of these like walls.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's interesting. To work from the heart is like.
Or you can fade from wherever you want. You can fade from your hand. You can fade from your heart. You can fade from your knee. You can fade from your head.
Yeah.
You can decide where to fade from. And Rudolf Steiner described that if you fade from there or there or there, you see different sectors of reality. And he said once that I like to fade from my liver, said Steiner. He used the same method, actually, to get into the spiritual world. And he said that I am a specialist on my liver, he said, to go into things.
And out of your experience, is there a difference?
Yeah.
Where do you start? What's the best part to start with?
No, you do different things. The best start to, the thing to start with is from the heart.
Yeah.
Fade from the heart. As I started when I was 5 or 6, I don't remember where I started.
Okay.
Actually,
no.
I have no idea anymore.
Okay, I think time is running, as we see by the clock.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's time to sort of wrap it up for perhaps any final comments. Bailo, do you have some final question? Or?
Yeah, I guess just to follow up on the last point of thinking about this fading concept of, and it, I guess, clarifying like what exactly that even mean, like what it means for someone maybe who's like less familiar. It feels very like maybe not specific, like what it means to fade into something. And then also, I guess, within my own experience of whatever that means, there's the fear maybe of translocation that was already without knowing what it like that word for it, but like thinking about fading into someone or fading into something, not wanting to translocate energy is what I was perceiving, but elemental beings or whatever it is. So that's an interesting, for me, I'm thinking about that and wondering, I guess, there's the remedy of thinking through Christ.
Well, the most important is that you shouldn't do it as a hobby. I do it only when I'm asked to heal. But in machines, you can do it. In cell phones or 5G towers, you can change the negativity that comes from a 5G tower by fading into it and having Christ go into it. Then it is not pathological anymore. Or you can do it, and this is especially for the Americans, you can do it with the jab, the vaccine of corona. You can change it to take away all the negative effects of it. And that is, when you're asked, you can do that. But in things, you can do it without being asked. But you shall not go into other people without being asked and with the intention of helping.
Mm. Of their own intention. The helping, or of Christ.
Yeah, with the intention of helping. I have no self-interest in doing it.
Yeah. But when you're just studying, like when you're learning, trying to learn or practicing it.
At the agriculture school, I lived together in several men. There was one guy who came from Punjab in North India, and his family tradition was 5 or 6 thousand years old. He had written family books, and they had this knowledge of how to go into people and order their elemental beings to come to them. And he told me that his uncle misused his technique to make women come to him. So he could, in the night, sit and go into a woman, take the elemental being, and after half an hour, she stood outside his sleeping room and said, "Let me in." He did that, and that was terrible. That is black magic. So you see, all cultures know this thing, even ours, but we deny it because we are materialistic. We don't believe in it.
Hmm. Yeah, or maybe there are people that...
Oh, yeah. There are people who use it, of course. Black magicians, they are really exploiting this, and they are using spiritual people for their own benefit. Because the more spiritual you are a more easy target. So anthroposophists are very easy targets for black magic. And I see today that the left-hand societies, the black magic societies, they are using more and more anthroposophists and anthroposophic connections for their benefit. So one must be careful.
And I think sort of the going back or wrapping it up, this Christ consciousness would sort of be the main thing.
That is the protection.
To deal with that, first of all, for your own protection against black magic, but also in helping or developing the world, which are a question to a lot of people today with climate and Ukraine and whatever, COVID. So that's sort of to try to grasp the Christ consciousness and find your own methods in working that with that would be sort of a conclusion of what you've been telling us. So I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah.
And thanks a lot to you too, Bailo.
Thank you.
And thanks, Ari.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And thank you all viewers, and welcome back to the Curiositas International podcast.